I'm Brad Locke.
And I'm Gene Phelps, and this is Prep Rally.
We're talking Northeast Mississippi High School sports, brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome into a new episode of Prep Rally, a high school sports podcast brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com, coming to you every Wednesday here. I'm your host, Brad Locke, joined by Gene Phelps. Just Gene and I, as we mentioned last week, Blake Morgan off to, I guess, greener pastures, off to
Oranger pastures.
Yeah, up into Knoxville.
Yeah, I believe Blake is going to cover recruiting for SEC country, and he's also going to do a little Tennessee football.
So. There you go. And what this means for you, Gene, is you get to do all area baseball and softball all by yourself.
That's right.
Which we'll talk about.
I think I've done that before.
Yeah. And that's one of the things we'll talk about on today's episode. Also, of course, we're going to recap the baseball championships they just held down in Pearl at Trustmark Park. We had a couple of area teams bring home state titles. Had a lot of head six teams down there, so four of them were not able to finish it off, but still a fine showing overall by the area baseball teams, just to have that many teams down in Pearl. And also, we're going to have an athlete of the week. I know the girls are done with all their seasons, but we had some really good performances this past weekend with the baseball team, so we will have an athlete of the week, a male athlete of the week. So all of that coming up here on this episode. Do want to remind you that there's a variety of ways to listen to us. Of course, you can find us on iTunes, any of your podcast apps. Hit the subscribe button. You'll get notified when a new episode drops. Also, we can stream online, preprally.djournal.com. And we're on Twitter, at djournalpreps. Let's start with the baseball, Gene. We had six teams down there. We had two teams win state. We'll start with Tupelo, winning the 6A title for the first time in 24 years. First time since the Kirk Presley days, Gene.
Yeah, Kirk Presley's teams won back-to-back with Larry Harmon as the skipper.
Yep.
And it's been a long time ago. It was in my early years, about my seventh and eighth year here, sixth and seventh year. Bobby Pepper covered those teams. Some of you got people out there remember Bobby Pepper. He still works here.
Sure does.
Works for our neighbor's section. And Bobby covered those Kirk Presley teams. I'm kind of jealous looking back. Bobby had a really nice ride with that crew. Tupelo High, wow, what a season.
Yeah, I don't know if 6A going into the year, many people thought of Tupelo as a contender. I mean, they're always in the mix in the playoffs.
Right,
But I don't know if they were considered the best team going into the season.
No, I don't think so. And I don't think anybody really knew who the best team was in 6A. You'd heard Northwest Rankin was really good, but they were on probation. I'd heard that Madison Central was good. Of course, they're good. Like Tupelo, they're good every year and competitive and in the playoffs. On the coast, you don't ever really know. And when I say the coast or down south, you just don't really know what you're going to get. You got the Pine Belt, too, with the Petal and Oak Grove. And, of course, the coast with Ocean Springs and Gulfport and those teams. So, real competitive. And there was no clear-cut favorite, I don't think, because Gulfport, the team Tupelo wound up beating, was kind of a surprise. Had a kind of an unusual Gulfport season and really made a great run to get to the championship series. But, this Tupelo team was balanced. I think one of the keys down the stretch is they've got really great pitching, and that's what it all comes down to in a playoff scenario, especially when they're keeping pitch counts. It helps if you got three good pitchers in this case.
Yeah, and that's what happened. It was a tight series, an entertaining series. Had two walk-off hits in extra innings in each of the first two games. Tupelo in game one got the walk-off hit from
Jackson Bridges,
the ace pitcher.
Yeah, Jackson had pitched a really great game and wound up having to win it himself with a walk-off, a bases-loaded single. Really just a big win for Tupelo there. I think it's always great when you can win game one.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good momentum shift, even though they did wind up losing game two.
On a walk-off in extra innings.
Well, actually, that was the one where they had like the close call on the double play.
Yeah.
I believe it was in the ninth inning. All these things, when you cover, I sat through something like 16 games this week, and they all start running together, even when you're covering them.
Oh, yeah.
I had to go back and look at some of this stuff to remember it. But there was a double play that we got in Tupelo out of the inning. Tupelo coach Justin Reed thought there was interference. I looked at the replay. Robbie Donahoe from WCBI had a replay, and it was tough. I mean, It was a bang-bang call. I don't think, you know, it was close.
Yeah.
I don't think it really matters to the Golden Wave now.
No, probably not.
But that night it meant a lot. But Tupelo lost that second game 4-3. Then come back in game three.
And Saturday there was first there was confusion if they were even going to play because there was rain coming in and they thought MHSAA said – And you confirmed this, like you double and triple confirmed this, that, oh, they're going to play Monday. MHSAA was,
play Monday.
Didn't realize Tupelo was still in town.
Yeah, play Monday at 1 o'clock. Tupelo had come to town. They'd had graduation the night before. Justin Reed and his staff and I think the administrators thought it'd be best if they'd get the players on the bus after graduation and bring them on down.
Sure.
It was kind of funny. I was calling Justin Reed after I had tweeted out about the postponement to Monday. I've had a feeling they were down there. I saw, the fact they were all boarding the bus. Somebody had tweeted out a picture. And I figured, well, you know, maybe they only came part of the way. They just wanted to get them out of Tupelo. So I called Justin Reed, and he got right back with me. Didn't answer right away. And the story I was going to work on was, hey, you guys are playing Monday. How does that benefit you pitching-wise? You know what I mean? Does your get to come back with Bridges, you know, because of the pitch count and all that? And it's a different week. And Justin Reed goes, Mr. Gene, he says, what do you know that I don't know? He said, we're fixing to go take BP at Jackson Prep, I think. Yeah. And anyway, to make a long story short, it got ironed out within about a two-hour period. It did rain delay them for approximately 3 hours, but they got the game in. And Josh Smith.
Yeah, their third pitcher, because you had Jackson Bridges game one, Charlie Greer game two, and those are two really good pitchers. Right. And then you got to rely on your number three guy, and Josh came through in a big way.
He did. He's a sweeping left-hander. He's a junior. He's some folks that follow the Golden Wave know him as the kicker on the Tupelo football team.
Yeah.
And, wow, what a performance. Four hit, gave up four hits, struck out five, got into a little trouble in the fourth inning. Walked a couple of batters. Levi Bishop, the pitching coach, himself a great pitcher during his career at Saltillo ICC in Delta State, went out there and told him, hey, calm down, go back to doing what you were doing. And Josh wound up getting out of the inning with back-to-back strikeouts.
So, yeah.
Really a gutsy performance by him. And
final score was 3-0.
Yeah.
And, you know, this series kind of was a good encapsulation of Tupelo's season. They didn't tear it up at the plate, but they did what they needed to offensively, and they got really solid pitching as they've had all year.
Yeah, and that's a key. And Justin Reed, you could tell he always works to try to get runs. And if he can get a runner on base, he'll put Nick Ratliff, the basketball player, in and let Nick run, and they'll steal second. He just wants to. He does everything he can to get runners in scoring position, and you got to take chances, especially when you get in the playoffs. You know, you may not ever get to that path again. I mean, Tupelo may not win another state championship in Reed's tenure, or it's just you can't take those things for granted. You got to go for it now.
Yeah.
And that's how Reed played throughout the playoffs. I mean, Tupelo was aggressive, and he knew they weren't just going to pound it up and down the lineup and get 10, 12 hits every game.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Congratulations to Coach Reed and all the way for everybody contributed. Yeah. It was a cliche-ish team win.
Yes, sure it was. But and you mentioned Reed, just his second year on the job.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not sure if people knew what to expect when he came in and replaced Gary Enos. I mean, they've had success over the years. They'd been Enos had gotten them to Pearl in the past. They had not been able to close the deal. But Justin, man, he wrung every bit of talent out of this team, didn't he?
He did. And it was enjoyable. I know Blake and I kind of swapped back and forth covering them. You know, of course, by the time they started the season 6-6,
yeah,
and that was about the time we got back from the state tournament.
Basketball,
basketball's last so long now, and baseball and spring sports start so early. You kind of catch on and go, but really, what a great season they wound up having, and there's nothing better than winning that state championship.
That's right. Morville, the other area team to win the state title in 3A, it's the ninth for the program, the first without Rex Berryman as coach, the first since 05. That's a pretty long stretch for Morville baseball to go without a title, 12 years.
It really is. And Derek Thompson, the coach, was an assistant that year in 2005 when Morville and Rex Berryman won that last championship. And Derek said, hey, this is pretty easy. Of course, now he didn't get the job right away after Rex retired, but Derek's taking over the program. And you know, 3A was one of those deals that was kind of up in the air. You know, I would ask, you know, some other folks, you know, what about 3A? What about Morville? And they said, well, they got the team, they might could do it. And, you know, I think they were kind of thinking of the Morville over the last couple of years. It would get knocked out in, quote, north half or maybe in the quarterfinals or something like that and have a good team, but maybe not good enough. But this Morville team was definitely good enough with the players they had. Will Armistead, a sophomore pitcher, really had a great year for him. Of course, you got Trace Henry was their leadoff batter, batted like 380, 112 games, just a solid performer for that Morville team all season long. And, you know, everybody contributed. The bottom of Morville's order actually wound up winning the game for him the other day.
Yeah, game two. Yeah, it was a sweep of Seminary, and I was going to say they had a lot of heroes.
Yeah, they had number six hitter singles, number seven hitter doubles. I mean, and then the number nine hitter, a kid named Hunter Brangan, comes up and has the go-ahead run with the RBI sack fly.
Yeah, I like I like his quote in the story. He's like, "Yeah, I was scared."
He was truthful. I mean, you're talking about six, seven, and nine batters contributing to the championship win. Trace Henry, you know, coming up with a big RBI. Now Trace Henry did make the big diving catch late in the game in the bottom of the inning to win for the final out.
Yeah. And Andy Franks came on in relief of Will Armistead to get the win.
Andy Franks, man, what a player. He led Morville in hitting this year. He batted about .411 coming into the playoffs. And he's a junior, and he'll be back. And he'll be, I'll tell you, heading into the season next year, I'm going to make him a preseason favorite to be player of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, what a season that kid had. And what a player, and he's just had a solid year all season. He's the one that came in and closed the door when Armistead had gone as far as he could go, and Franks came in, had labrum surgery, shoulder surgery, in the summer, and had only pitched six innings during the season.
Yeah.
But the coach went, Derek went, hey, I know this guy can throw strikes.
Yeah,
and that's what he did.
And he also plays center field.
Right.
And made one of the best catches of the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I think in game one it was.
May have been.
Going out toward left center, made a great diving catch to end that. If that got down, I think Seminary had a couple of runners on base.
Right.
I think that would have been a difference maker. So, yeah, Morville gets the sweep there, but certainly Seminary didn't make it easy on the Troopers. Blew a three-run lead, I think, in the seventh inning, wasn't it? Had to go into eight innings in that game two to get the win. But just a great team effort for Morville, and, you know, back on top, which is where they're used to being. But now they get to go up to 4A, Gene, next year. And 4A, I believe, might be the toughest classification in this area for baseball.
It could be. I believe that's where, you know, Corinth and Houston and those guys play.
Yeah.
Ripley's good. You know, I think Morville can hang right there with them.
I think
that's one sport Morville can hang in 4A. I'm not slighting any other sports that Morville's got, but – In baseball, I think Morville's stuck their flag back into the mountain and said, "Hey, we're a force to be reckoned with too." And they've got some good players back. So,
yeah. Again, we had four other teams from the area that made the trip to Pearl, did not come back as champions, but still had fine seasons. Smithville in 1A, had East Union in 2A, Corinth in 4A, and Oxford there in 5A. That Corinth series, Gene, you're taking on a West Lauderdale program that's won now 14, I think it is.
Yeah, Coach Boatner, Jerry Boatner, has won everyone up.
And Corinth hadn't been there in forever. And you give them credit, they came out and they took the first game and pretty much gave West Lauderdale all they wanted that series. Took them the distance.
I was close to celebrating my first birthday the last time Corinth won a state championship in 1956.
Yeah.
Just months away. There was good baseball. The North had good representatives down there.
Certainly.
I mean, that East Union team, a lot of folks didn't think they'd be back after winning the state championship, but there they were. The problem is they met a Lois Dar team that had 36, 37 wins.
Yeah.
And they had 36 and 37 wins for a reason.
Exactly.
So, a tough go there for them.
I think Oxford, you know, they had won the last two, but they lost a lot of guys, and a lot of them went to Ole Miss. Yeah. And then people might have thought maybe, oh, this would be a bit of a rebuilding year.
I tried to look at Pearl River Central. Pearl River Central had never been to Jackson.
Yeah.
They were the only team there that had never been in any of the classifications, and so they didn't have that much of a history in baseball. They had 11 losses. I didn't really look at that schedule enough to see who those 11 were against. But I'm going to tell you, I think it was game two. They were tearing the cover off the ball. I mean, they could hit. And I thought, oh, my goodness, if you can hit like that up and down the lineup like they were, I said Oxford's in trouble, and that's what happened in game three. Yeah. Pearl River, once they got going, they had that one big inning, and it was essentially over. It was like 7-2 or something.
Yeah, that's right. Well, now that the baseball championships are over, Gene, and all the spring sports are done, now you get to turn your attention to the all-area teams for baseball and softball that we put together every year. As we mentioned, Blake is gone, so he jumped ship early on us, Gene. Couldn't get him to stick around to help you with all-area. Let's talk first about, we're not going to give anything away.
No.
We'll talk about some of the people that could be first teamers or player of the year candidates. But first, what's the format going to look like for these teams?
I think we're going to do, the simplest thing to do would be just like, it wouldn't be simple, is to pick nine each. But there's too many good players. I think we're going to go, or I'm going to go with a first team nine players and a second team nine players. And that would be for baseball and softball. And I think I can fill those 18 up. And, you know, the toughest thing when you do this is picking the first nine. When you get to about number 8, 9, 10, and 11, they're all about the same in my eyes. Yep. But you have to cut it off somewhere and make that distinguish. I do put some stock in the fact that if you want a state championship, you want it for a reason.
Yeah.
And I don't mind putting extra players from a state championship team on there. And the same thing goes with the second team. When you start doing a second nine, then now you're getting like number 18 and then a possible 19 and 20 that could be on there. It's going to be close because we've got good players.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of extra tough this year too with baseball because you don't have like a Jason Barber who just seems like a little cut above everybody else for players, talking about player of the year.
Right.
Or, you know, and like you said, and just, heck, just choosing nine first-teamers is going to be really, really tough.
We had five state champions last year. The thing that made that tough was everybody had great players because they won state championships. It was trying to figure out how can we get some other people on other teams in here because every team that won a state championship had at least two good players, maybe more. Oxford had four or five.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and, you know, that's the toughest task is just trying to narrow it down. And softball is going to be the same way. I mean, that Tupelo team and that Morville team, those two teams are loaded with really good ball players.
Yeah, yeah.
So this area is a really good softball area. The Mantachie team that got down there has got a lot. And there's a lot of, in girls softball, there are always a lot of good young players. And we're going to have some 8th and 9th graders make the team.
Yeah.
And I have no problem with that. Hallie Donald, who's a senior now, a candidate for our player of the year.
Won it last year.
Yeah. I'll never forget calling Perry Wilburn.
Yeah.
And I said, Coach, it's been 5 years ago. And I said, Coach, need some players. And he goes, well, guess got to go with that 8th grader of mine. And that was Donald. And you know, she was worthy, and he was wondering, do you put an 8th grader on there? And I went, yeah, she's your best player, yeah,
she's good, she goes good. On there. Age doesn't matter.
No And you can't say, well, maybe she'll make it next year. You don't know what you reward the kids for the years they had for that year, and you don't look ahead, well, they could win it next year, that type of thing.
Good luck putting that together. I'm sure that'll run sometime in June, I'm guessing.
It will. The biggest problem there, and you wouldn't think it'd be a problem, is getting mug shots of the first team players. I should have kept the collection of mug shots I get from players. We had like a glamour shot of a softball player one time. The girl was like, I don't know what she did. She shot the picture like she was looking into her, like her overhang mirror or something, like she was putting makeup on. We're going, I had a kid from Tupelo one time. I think he held the camera down around his knees and shot up. I always saw was his nose holes. And I'm going, what are you doing? And
it's real simple, kids. Here, if Mr. Gene asks you to send a headshot, just go find outside or in a well-lit room, find good light, have somebody else take the picture.
Right.
Okay, just square up your head in the middle of the picture, you know, shoulders up, and we can crop it if we need to. Take two or three, find the best one, send it to them. Straight on headshot, okay?
Right, and get close to them.
You don't be standing 15 feet away.
I had a young man one time finally got me one. He said, "I'm sorry, it was late, and the kid that shot it for him must have been standing 20 feet away from me." I was like, "This will not work." You know, yeah. I at the time I said, "I'm 59 years old and I can shoot my own mugshot." You know, with an iPhone.
You think teenagers ought to be able to do that?
I know.
Come on, kids.
In the selfie age. But anyway, it's complicated. It's easy to be able to connect, a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be able to make the connection to get. So anybody that's listening out there, or a coach or player, if we ask you for a mugshot, we need it, make it a good one.
Yeah, yeah. It's going in the paper for posterity.
Okay. That's it.
There you go. Let's wrap up the show with our regular feature that we do when sports are in season. It's the athlete of the week. We normally do a female athlete of the week and a male athlete of the week, but all the ladies have ended their season with the a couple of weeks ago when softball and other sports wrapped up. So we just had baseball this past week, so we'll just have a male athlete of the week. Gene, we've already mentioned him.
Yeah, he might make it this football season, kicking a 50-yard field goal to win a game. Josh Smith from Tupelo, pitching effort, four-hitter, five strikeouts, complete game.
I mean, you throw a complete,
shutout.
Yeah, in a complete game shutout in game three of the state championship. Yeah.
And you're one of the number three pitchers because he had three choices,
and
he made the right choice.
Yeah, well, there you go. And so athlete of the week, that'll be I guess we won't do another one until August because, again, you know, nothing.
That's right.
Nothing.
And I won't be
planned.
Here to do it.
That's true, Gene.
Well, I mean, it's because I will have retired.
Gene's
but
retiring.
Not to
and
die,
I don't know if
I
we
hope.
Mentioned that on here. I don't know if we made that public, Gene. You're retiring at the end of July, but at some point you'll return to do some freelance work, or as we call it, some stringer work, cover a few games here and there.
And then I'll see people at stadiums and they go, "I thought you retired."
Yeah, sports writers don't retire, Gene. Not really.
We just fade away.
We just fade away like an old newspaper. All right. So, so no more athletes of the week, but we'll keep doing prep rally throughout the summer. We may take a week off here and there as you and or I go on vacation or whatnot, but we'll still talk about high school sports, start looking ahead maybe a little bit to football. But
got some good players in the area.
And certainly when all area comes out, we'll touch on that again. And I got the All Sports Award Banquet coming up as well in a couple of weeks. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us here every Wednesday for Prep Rally. Again, you can find us on iTunes, any of your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @djournalpreps for updates on when we have a new episode, and also just for updates in general on high school sports from the Daily Journal. So follow Gene on Twitter too, by the way, at least until he retires. @Gene Phelps, I'm @Brad Locke. We'll see you next time.